everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And I'm Nick.
And this is a Hunt for Wolverine Spotlight. And we're going to be talking about the fourth and final of the number one issues. This one is Mystery in Madripoor. It's written by Jim Zub. We've got art by Tony Silas. Color art by Felipe Sobreiro. S-O-B-R-E-I-R-O. So this is the X-Men book, I guess you'd say. You know, we talked about Weapon Lost. That was the first one that came out. That was the street level, the noir detective side of the mystery of hunting for Wolverine. Then we had the Adamantium Agenda.
The Avengers.
Right, the Secret Avengers, more of the big popcorn action-packed kind of summer blockbuster kind of feel of a series. And then we had Claws of the Killer, number one.
The villains.
The villains, and not just the villains, but the horror.
The zombies.
Right, and I didn't even really necessarily pick up on that or read any solicits about that, but you know who told me that was Charles Soule himself. I was like, that's the horror aspect of going a little dark.
Oh.
And then Mystery in Madripoor, which is, you know, more closely tied into Logan's past. You know, obviously Madripoor, he spent a long time there as Patch. So it's the X-Men book.
So interestingly, it was all female team. I didn't realize that going in.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be that going in either. And yeah, I find that, I mean, I don't know, maybe they'll bring in some other X-Men at some point. So yeah, I wasn't really sure. Let me give a quick synopsis. So as Nick mentioned, it's an all-female team, and there are several flashback sequences. It starts off with Psylocke thinking about the things that she learned from Logan, his sense of honor. Then we get the roll call. So we've got Psylocke, we've got Kitty Pryde, Jubilee, Storm, Rogue, and of all people, Domino hanging on, who I've never and don't think she's ever officially been a part of the X-Men.
But Wolverine's been a part of X-Force.
That's true.
But I think that's their connection. That's why the rest of them don't really know her or like her.
Got it. Yeah, I didn't know if it was – I was like, it can't be based on the popularity of her solo series by Gail Simone, because I'm sure that this was being planned long before that. So anyway, they are on their way to Madripoor. They believe that Magneto may have something to do with the disappearance of Logan's body. They believe that he has the ability to have gotten through Forge's sensor alarm high-tech system he set up to let them know if anybody disturbed Logan's body. So they land, and to their surprise, Magneto's there waiting for them, and he asks them to meet at a restaurant later that evening and says that all will be revealed at that time. And then we see Magneto kind of fade out, I think, and appear to be some weird-looking chick with her brain exposed. I'm not really sure who that is. So the female X-Men head to the Princess Bar, which was an important part of the secret life of Logan in Madripoor. They meet the bartender there. His name is Mr. Halliday. And upon giving the code word, they're led down to Logan's secret quarters. And here comes the Storm flashback. And she's thinking about the fact that when she first met Logan, his room was very sparse. Just four walls and a floor and a ceiling, basically, when he first joined the X-Men. And she's thinking to himself how interesting it is to see this kind of secret lair of Logan's. And in a way, it's allowing her to see the things that were important to him after all this time, as opposed to when he joined the X-Men and was living in the bare room. So once they finish that flashback, it's time to have a flashback for Rogue. And she finds a letter, actually, that Carol Danvers wrote to Logan. Just asking Logan to do what he feels is right as it pertains to Rogue. So this letter was written back when Rogue first was invited to join the X-Men. So a little bit of back history, and Nick, you may not even know this. So Rogue's mutant ability, she has the ability to absorb the memories of others if she has skin-to-skin contact, and even some of their life force. She could actually kill somebody if she held on to them long enough. So that's what happens when she touches a normal person. If she touches a mutant or another super-powered being, she will absorb their powers for a length of time, and they will be weakened. So when Rogue was very early on when she appeared in Marvel Comics, it may even have been her first appearance in Avengers 10, Annual 10, not 100% about that. But she, what I do know is she came into contact with Carol Danvers, Miss Marvel, and did maintain a skin-to-skin contact for quite a while. So she absorbed Miss Marvel's powers. So she, that gave her her super strength, her ability to fly, her invulnerability, and a lot of Carol Danvers' memories. And at some point, she believed herself to be Carol Danvers. In fact, we see that in a story about that in X-Men 182, which is the issue that comes out, or came out rather, after the Dragon story that we just talked about in our Secret Wars follow-up. But anyway, when Rogue was having trouble dealing with having these memories of Carol Danvers, she went to the X-Men for help. The Brotherhood of Evil Mutants that she was a part of, and Mystique, who was a surrogate mother to her, were of no help. And she thought, you know, the one person that may be able to help me is Professor Xavier. And she was very young at this time, and she was invited to join the team. And when Carol Danvers found out about it, she had, because she had lost her powers, Rogue had absorbed them completely. She had hooked up with the Starjammers, which are kind of a spacefaring ragtag gang of pirate slash freedom fighter kind of guys, led by, of all people, Scott and Alex Summers, Cyclops and Havoc, their father, who they thought died in the plane crash that kind of manifested their powers. Yeah, I know, it's X-Men history, it gets convoluted. But anyway, Carol Danvers had hooked up with these Starjammers and had gotten some cosmic powers. I was going by the name of Binary at that time. And so she comes back to the X-Men, kind of looking to understand, and because she had reached out to the X-Men for help as well after her powers got stolen by Rogue. So she had a relationship there. She comes back. This all happens in X-Men 172, by the way. So she comes back to the mansion, and who does she see but Rogue there being welcomed by the X-Men. And it wasn't quite what it appeared to her. I mean, it wasn't like Professor Xavier was saying, yeah, come on in, no conditions, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he did want to help her. I mean, that's the point of the school, right? To help mutants deal with their powers. And he felt that Rogue was young enough that she could be reformed and you know, turn her back on her villainous ways. So that's what happened. But Miss Marvel, who Carol Danvers, who was Miss Marvel and now was Binary, was furious. She was like, she felt betrayed. You know, here's friends and heroes that she'd fought along for so many years that she felt they owed some allegiance to her, and they should not, you know, take in Rogue. That, you know, in a way, Rogue ruined her life, because it wasn't, as I said, just that she took her powers permanently, but also she took her memories, right? I mean, Carol Danvers at one point didn't even know who she was. She had complete amnesia. Her memories were gone. It's not like she absorbed her memories and Rogue had them and Carol Danvers still had them. She took them from her. So, you know, you can imagine what kind of trauma there was. So here we see some ramifications, and it's really cool to see Jim Zub digging back so far into Marvel history. So apparently we find out, as Rogue finds this letter, that Carol Danvers had written to Logan all those years ago. And the letter says something along the lines, I can't believe he offered safe haven to Rogue after she stole my memories, my powers, my life. I was violated by her, and now Charles is giving that monster a home. Makes me sick. I hope you'll balance the scales and make it right. So you know, we see Rogue in tears there. She feels so bad about it and has, you know, ever since it happened. So that's the little bit of Rogue flashback. And I know I just gave you a lot more than it was there in the book. So hopefully if any of you were confused and wondering what that was all about, now you know. So there you go. Then we have another flashback with Psylocke looking at Logan's samurai armor, thinking about what an honorable person he was, thinking back to a conversation she had with Wolverine, talking about if he ever thinks about his death. And he's like, man, I don't even know if I can die. So right now I'm just trying to live as long as I can. I'll worry about the next thing when it comes along, which seems to be a very Logan kind of way to look at it, right? So then they all get dressed up because, you know, they are women. They all get dressed up. They head out to King's Impresario restaurant, which is where Magneto invited them to come and meet him, and all would be revealed. And indeed, all is revealed because it turns out, again, it's a trap. It's not Magneto at all. It's that woman we saw earlier with her fishbowl head and brain exposed. And it turns out it's all the machinations of Viper. And we find out that the psychic's name is Mind Blast, and Viper has other colleagues along with her as well. All female, though, so it's all female on female fighting here. There's a woman that goes by the name of Knockout, who seems to have, like, I don't know, concrete fists or something like that. Kind of weird. There's also Snake Whip, rather, who, like the name implies, fights with a whip. Bloodlust, who goes after Domino. And finally, the one that really knocks Psylocke down for the count, who, in a way, is the most powerful of the X-Men, because she has all the kind of ninja-like powers of the body that she, you know, possessed, the ninja assassin she possessed, as well as all her psychic powers. And she's kind of waylaid by Sapphire Styx, who says, "Your soul is my sustenance," and seems to be absorbing her life force. So it's not looking good for the female X-Men. And Kitty Pryde runs through, manages to rescue Domino and Jubilee, but Storm and Rogue and Psylocke are still in the clutches of this other female team. And I'm not sure, because I think Sapphire was mentioned a little earlier when Mind Blast was at the airport posing as Magneto. So one thing I'm not clear is if it's Viper calling the shots or the Sapphire Styx character who's calling the shots. Because, you know, Viper has traditionally been a crime lord, a bigwig in Hydra. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise, and has history with Wolverine. In fact, she shows up and was a kind of a prominent character in the Death of Wolverine story by Charles Soule. So I guess that remains to be seen. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if she's the one calling the shots, but it also wouldn't surprise me if this this new character, the Sapphire Styx, that we've been introduced to is the one calling the shots. So overall, I thought it was a really solid start. I did find it strange that it's so female-centric, just because, I mean, if Wolverine's body is missing, and this is the X-Men book that deals with the X-Men going to look for him, I mean, I would expect, you know, Kurt to be there as well, Nightcrawler. I would expect Colossus to be there as well. They both have very strong ties and bonds with Wolverine, so it remains to be seen. And then to have all female villains also, I don't know if... I mean, I don't know. It just felt weird. Sometimes when you do that, I mean, it's fine. I'm not complaining about it. It's just sometimes it feels forced, right? When it's all females, it feels like they're, you know, doing it on purpose, the whole diversity thing or whatever. And, you know, Marvel's been accused of taking too many of their classic characters and gender bending them or you know, changing their race just for the sake of diversity and trying to be PC. I really don't care. I just want a good story. And when it's all female like this, it does feel a little weird. It does, you know, usually it's a mixed team. So not sure exactly what's going on. But like I said, it was a good start. And yeah, I'm looking forward to more and learning more about some of these villains. They did feel, it felt a little dated the way they were all introduced, with them calling out Whip Snake or Snake Whip, get her, and Bloodlust, you get Domino. And so, I don't know, kind of weird. It's a heart, hearkening back to the days of yore in comics, when that's how they used to do it. So what were your thoughts on the issue, Nick?
Well, when you see like a comic like this and you think like, okay, it's an all-female X-Men team, like right on. But then it always feels backwards when you have an all-female team that they're fighting. Like there's a, you won't remember this at all, so it's not a real spoiler. There's just a scene in Infinity War where Proxima Midnight is fighting three female characters, and you're like, okay, this is the girl power scene. They put the girl against the girls.
Yeah, exactly.
And I almost feel like that cheats it a little bit. It'd be more badass if it's, you know, an all-female team against a team of both genders that are badasses.
Yeah, exactly. I would have been fine if they just decided to go with all, you know, female X-Men going out.
Yeah. Like all them versus Magneto or something. It was awesome.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have thought of it as like a girl power thing, to use the term used. But then when you get the villain team and they're all girls too, now all of a sudden it seems like you're doing it on purpose, you know?
Yeah.
Like you're trying to do the girl power thing. So yeah, I agree with you. Did you know about the Carol Danvers thing? Like when you saw the scene with the letter, you know?
More than the history it gives you in the panel.
Okay. So you learned along with our listeners then, as I explained.
Yeah. Learned a lot. More than the comic book could hold.
Awesome. What do you think of the art?
I like the art a lot. I think it's an art style that really works in a book that has Wolverine actually in it, unlike the other books, through flashbacks. Because I think it works the best with his facial hair and his like build and stuff, more than the other character.
Yeah, I wasn't bowled over by the art. I thought it was, I don't want to say functional, because it was better than that. It was better than average, but it didn't blow me away. I think I haven't heard of this artist before. This what was his name again? Tony Silas. So I think there is room for him to grow. One thing I did notice a lot is that the camera angle in his panels, it's always tilted, or for the most part, not every single time. But did you notice that? How everything's kind of on a, not so much in the smaller like letterbox panels, but in a lot of the bigger scenes.
Yeah, you say that, and I'm looking at the first page where it's tilted.
Yeah,
yeah, and yeah, it's a Dutch tilt right there. So
yeah, look at the first page where they go down to his lair at the, or his room at the Princess Bar. Same thing. It's on a tilt.
Another Dutch angle. That's right.
Yeah.
They're all standing there.
Not sure if that's like a Tony Silas trademark, but whenever it goes to the big panels, same thing when we've got the panel with all the female X-Men in their fancy outfits heading to the restaurant. Same thing when they hit the restaurant, same thing when the Magneto. So I don't know. I just would have liked a little more variety. So again, I think the art's good, better than average. I do enjoy his line work, but I think there's some room for improvement, in the way he needs to kind of keep it interesting and vary the camera angles, so to speak, for the panels. I think the storytelling's good though. I never had any trouble, you know, falling from panel to panel, going back and forth. I thought the action scenes were handled really well. But yeah, there is room for improvement. Also, I noticed in the fight scenes that the backgrounds are very light. I mean, a lot of them don't even have backgrounds. It's just
pink,
solid color. So I don't know if that's a function of speed or just a stylistic choice. But just, again, something I noticed. The colors of the book are very bright. And again, I mean, not to just, you know, pound into the listeners about the girl power stuff, but a lot of pink. There's a lot of pink in this issue. again, I don't know if it has to do anything at all. I would tend to think maybe not, that's just kind of a coincidence by Felipe Sobrero. But again, it's something I noticed. I mean, the very first splash page is a lot of pink. And then in the restaurant, it's a lot of pink. So again, just something I noticed. Did you notice that there was a lot of pink in the coloring?
Not until we were, I was looking at the pages, like while you were talking about them just now, yeah. When you said that there was almost no backgrounds. I'm like, yeah, most of the backgrounds are solid pink.
Yeah. They're pink or purple. Yeah. It's just kind of weird. Right. So don't know if that, I mean, and Mind Blast herself tends to look like really pink. It's like, okay, we get it. This is the girl book. But again, maybe not. Maybe it's just a coincidence. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. We'll see where it goes from here. I do like the effect of the pinkish lightning that Sapphire Styx has when she uses her power. That's pretty cool. It's like this really bright, I don't know, psychic lightning, I guess you'd say, that has like pinkish outline. So
yeah, it just seems pretty powerful too.
Yeah, it just looks cool, especially that last page where she's kind of cradling Psylocke and just looking menacingly out towards us. So yeah, a good start. We'll see where it goes from here. And I'm wondering where Magneto actually is, because, you know, we see in the story that, yeah, supposedly Magneto is possibly returning to his villainous ways. And he apparently kind of runs Madripoor, so to speak, but maybe not if Viper's back, right? So is there some kind of gang war going on? Where is Magneto? How was Mind Blast able to masquerade so well as him? We really haven't learned too much yet. But again, it's only the first issue of four, so quite a bit of setup, I imagine. But I guess we'll find out. Not much hint of where Logan is at all either, really. I mean, other than seeing him in flashback in this book, and then in Claws of the Killer, we actually saw him maybe at that power station. I mean, we haven't gotten, I mean, we're 25% of the way through the story, and we don't really have any idea where he is yet. So it's going to be interesting to see where it goes from here.
Which number two are you looking forward to the most?
Ooh, good question. Which, you know, and this kind of surprises me. Like, if you would have asked me that question, like before any of the series came out, like which series I was looking forward to or thought I would enjoy the most, I think I would have gone with either this one, Mystery in Madripoor, or perhaps the Weapon Lost, the Daredevil one, because and that purely on the basis of that's Charles Soule writing that, and I'm just a huge fan of Charles and love his writing. So, and Daredevil's a character that he's, you know, very familiar with, obviously, since he's writing his regular title. So I think I probably would have gone with one of those two, and if I had to be pinned down for one, I would have gone with Weapon Lost. So I say all that to say this. It's Adamantium Agenda. It's the Tom Taylor book with characters that I normally don't really like. I'm pretty whatever about. I mean, I like Iron Man and I like Spider-Man well enough, but Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, I could take them or leave them. No real interest in them. But man, that book was just so much fun. So yeah, I think it's Adamantium Agenda. What about you?
I would agree. But that was the one I expected to like being a fan of the movies getting into the comics. I've watched Jessica Jones. I've watched Luke Cage. I've watched Iron Man and Spider-Man, but I'm surprised how close second Weapon Lost is for me. Cause I'm really excited for, I can't remember his last name. I'm really excited to see more of that in Human.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know
what? So listeners, let me back up here before I let the cat out of the bag. Is there anything else we want to say about Mystery and Madripoor?
I think we're good.
Okay, me too. I talked to Charles Soule this weekend at Phoenix Comic Fest. In fact, I even did a little interview with him. We talked about a couple things. We talked about his debut novel, The Oracle Year, which came out a little over a month ago, I think. And we also talked about Hunt for Wolverine. So we are going to play that interview not on today's episode. I'm saving it for next week's Hunt for Wolverine Spotlight when Nick and I talk about all those like one or two page backups when that were in the legacy titles when Wolverine was kind of wandering around. And then we'll play the interview with Charles as well, and his take and where he feels like the story's going. So you have that to look forward to, just cause I thought it would fit in better if we did it, next week, since, this Wednesday, tomorrow as this is being released, which would be the 30th, there is no new, Hunt for Wolverine title this Wednesday. So, next Tuesday we'll do the legacy backups and we'll have that interview from Charles as well. So, but yeah, I meant to ask, and one of the things I forgot to ask Charles about was Frank McGee, because he did write Inhumans for a while. And so I didn't know if he was the one that maybe created Frank McGee, and I meant to ask him about it and I just completely spaced on it. But yeah, he's super interesting, as well. I totally agree with you. And yeah, you know what? Let me look it up real fast. His first appearance is in Inhumans number 7, which came out in 2014, which was written by Charles Soule. So there you go.
There you go.
We were right. Yeah, Charles did create him. So that makes perfect sense. I did ask Charles about choosing to do a Wolverine book, and that being the one that that ties in with the Hunt for Wolverine, and him being the one to write it. So, and he basically said he wanted to have a noir kind of story, and that in a way, Wolverine is somewhat of a street character, despite the fact he's been in a lot of these cosmic universe changing events through the years, with the, you know, with the X-Men and other heroes throughout the Marvel universe. But really at his heart, he's closer to a Daredevil than he is to like, an Iron Man, let's say, or a Rogue. Right. So, yeah, so we'll have that for you. Charles had some interesting things to say, and, he's always great to talk to. And I'm a huge fan, so it was great to see him. So, all right, anything else we want to say about Hunt for Wolverine, Mystery and Madripoor, or the series so far?
No, I like it a lot. I saw what the title of the final one is, I think.
Yeah, Death's End? Is that what it is?
I thought it was just Dead End, but Dead I don't remember. Yeah. I saw it today, like on Twitter or something.
Yeah, you're right, so. You're right. That's it. Dead End or Dead... I think it's Dead Ends, actually.
I think it is Dead Ends, yeah, because it's all the books combining back again.
Yeah, exactly.
So, awesome.
One more thing I will add is that apparently the sales for a lot of people on these issue ones haven't been great. So I wonder how much momentum it's going to have, or if that Marvel event fatigue, so to speak, is still affecting sales, or if people are waiting to read it in trade. So, you know, it's funny, like more and more people are jumping off of Marvel and I'm like trying to jump back in, you know, and Charles Soule is running this event basically, you know, despite the fact there's three other writers writing three of the four miniseries, he's writing the bookends, he's writing one of the four series. And this is all based on his, you know, his kind of idea of the way Logan's coming back. So I don't know if it's for that reason or just, I felt it was time. I was interested enough. I knew you were going all in on it. So anyway, I'm enjoying it so far. So I hope you listeners at least check out one of the series, or at the very, very least, you're just tuning into the Spotlight episodes that we're putting out every week. And then, you know, I mean, we don't read you panel by panel, but I suppose if you listen to the Spotlights, you get the whole story eventually. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Source Podcast. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. A ton of content coming out this week with all the interviews I did at Phoenix Fan Fest. And in fact, there should be another episode releasing today with a recap of the convention. So if you're curious who I got a chance to talk to, I encourage you to listen to the other episode from today. And be sure you're following us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to know when all those episodes are being released. And coming up next month, I think it's the 14th, 15th, and 16th? Does that sound right? Is Denver Comic Con?
16th, 17th? Yeah, it's close to that.
Yeah, it's either 14, 15, 16, or 15, 16, 17. So should be in Denver for that, along with Nick. And then, of course, in July, the big kahuna, San Diego Comic Con, will be providing a lot of coverage for that, as we always do. There's also an outside chance I'll be in Vegas the last weekend in June for Amazing Las Vegas, but that's yet to be determined. Not sure I can make that work with Denver and San Diego. So, day job, got to pay the bills. You all understand, I'm sure. Okay, when you go to lrmonline.com for past episodes of our podcast, be sure you check out all the other content. We've got a lot of coverage on movies, TV shows, all that kind of good stuff. So, as always, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.